Martin Newman, consumer champion, with the latest version of my Consumer Focus podcast. Thank you so much to my wonderful guests, Mary, Claire, and Dave, for joining me today. Unfortunately, the lovely Layla, who's normally with us, is having issues with the old interweb. So there's just going to be the three of us today. And we've got lots to catch up on. We're going to start by talking about generally how you guys are, what's going on from a consumer point of view, what's going on in terms of the cost of living crisis, as we always do. And then we're going to do a little bit of a deep dive into online customer service, one of my favorite topics. So, Mary Claire, if I could start with you, how are you feeling about everything? I mean, it's like crazy, isn't it? One day after the other, you never know what's coming next.
Yeah.
It seems to be right now.
I did just, prior to this starting up, I just screenshotted the bank account direct debit to EDF Energy and sent it to my husband and said, is this happening every month? Because he just gave a meter reading in. I don't even want to say what the charge was, but it's sort of obviously been bubbling away, hasn't it? It's going to get worse and worse and worse, but it is frightening for everyone. But I just wonder how people and older people, you know, are going to cope with this. I know there's a, you know, fuel allowance everybody gets, older people get, but this is alarming times.
And tell me, without I don't think you should share the number, but you know, without going into that detail, do you think it's going to change, you know, your behavior as a family in terms of whether that's you know, not switching the lights on, or whether that's changing your spending pattern, particularly as we're coming into the peak period for retailers at Christmas and everything?
Yeah, we're already doing it. I mean, we're hot on turning lights off and what have you, but I feel like it's definitely making me rethink, do I need to tumble dry that? Have we got, you know, can I dry it in this tiny bit of outside space we have? But I feel like I'm conscious about, you know, conserving energy anyway, but never more so than now. It's really scary.
Yeah.
And also fill in the car. I felt like what I would normally put in would, you know, top it up for this amount, which seems to take me, you know, my regular places. I don't use the car that much. And then suddenly it feels like we're filling it up all the time. It's worrying.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry to hear that. Dave, what about yourself?
I'm still trying to stay positive, living my merry life as I do. At Chateau Dave at the moment, we've recently got an air fryer. Don't know how to use it, and I got scolded for using the oven. So that's a little bit of a change. We've also got some, I think, mass-produced solar charging lights that come on when you move past them. So the house feels like a hotel in order just to stop switching on lights and just having a little bank of energy.
I have to say, though, knowing you as I do already, you know, the amount that you move around generally means, will that not just be more or less the same as having the lights on all the time?
Yeah. They the reason they call the top of the stairs the landing is because they just keep blinking on and off as I make routine trips to the fridge. But apart from that, I'm glad that I started disciplining myself earlier, and trying to see the advantages of those. For example, getting off one train stop earlier and then cycling the rest of the journey just to keep that cost down, or cash backing and vouchering. And every time that a voucher pops out now, it gets stuck on the notice board at home. So, like I said, it's positive, but changes that I did start making or made before, I think they're definitely going to become a discipline now.
What about your family and friends? Are you, I mean, presumably this is a regular topic of conversation. What's everything that's going on?
I'm not always too sociable. I don't always socialize, so I don't think it's affecting me too much. But, you know, I find it such a grown-up thing to talk about politics as soon as people change the subject from, like, how are your children? Are they growing? How tall are they now? To, did you see the latest budget? So it's not affecting me too much. I try and change the topic, except on focus podcasts like this.
Mary Claire, what about yourself in terms of family, friends, meeting other mums at the school gates or parents or whatever? You know, is it a very hot topic of conversation generally in terms of everything that's going on?
Yeah, I really do feel like a few of my friends have been talking about it a lot, really. And in terms of just forward planning stuff, like the Christmas meetup got mentioned. And I think people are being a bit more selective about what they're planning to do, because this is a very real cost. And there's no getting away from it. We need energy, so it's not something you're opting in and out of. It's affecting us all. So I think there is definitely more conversation about it.
I was going to say, just kind of building on that, going back to what you said earlier about the steep increase in your energy costs. Do you and your partner generally set a budget for the home, you know, for Christmas, or do you just kind of generally the kids tell you what they want and off you go, or how does that work? And will this increase affect ultimately, do you think, what you spend over Christmas on gifts?
I wouldn't say we set a budget, because it's kind of my domain, the shop. And I think that my daughter is of an age, only six, where, to be honest, things coming from Father Christmas seem just magical. So it didn't necessarily cost a lot of money, but it's a big box. Or to be honest, I think she's at that sweet spot where it's so exciting that he's coming at all. I would be amazed if she opened and said, but I wanted an iPad. I don't feel that we are in a kind of, I'm not at that scary stage where I'm going to have a really disappointed child if I didn't get the latest Nike trainers or what have you. But equally, what I have said to her often, the school did a really nice toy drive last year where kids were encouraged to go and pick out a toy to go to the toy bank, like the food bank for less fortunate children. And with that came a bit of an explanation, because she said, well, I thought Father Christmas got everything. And I said, well, you know, he has a bit of help from mummy and daddy, because if they go into school and say, I got a bike, and you know, children don't have an equivalent thing, I think it's important to instill in them that, you know, it's not a fair society and not everybody gets the same, rather than them thinking Santa Claus has selected them for something. This is probably too much detail for that, but I am very mindful of what the spend is at Christmas. But you know, I'd be lying if I said my husband was doing any of it.
Fair enough. What about you, Dave? I mean, are you offsetting, you know, like you mentioned about the fact you've already started to change your behavior, you know, getting off the train or stop early or whatever it happens to be. Do some of those changes that you've made help you at Christmas make, you know, decisions about spending a bit more, or generally, I mean, again, what's your mindset? I mean, I know you're glass half full, but do you envisage spending the same kind of money this Christmas you would normally do, or do you think your behavior will be tempered by what's going on out there?
No, I think in our house, we're fortunate to be a tight-knit family, so we can just ask what we want and then just know how much that's going to be. When it comes to the magic of Christmas, which still exists, I do try and get some extra gifts that will benefit others. So one of the things that I've done in previous years, and now that lockdown's been lifted, I can start doing again, is I'll get what you wanted, that main object, but I might also go to a charity shop and then find something else, just so I can. I'm not the kind of guy that can present things in a bouquet or a basket, but can you imagine a little gift basket that's got, you know, some fair trade chocolates plus the charity shop plus the thing you asked for, and then it becomes a lot more thoughtful. So I think I'd lean more towards thoughtfulness, this kind of stuff. I mean, you're talking to someone that still complains but I don't get an advent calendar. They drop in price like a week into Christmas time. Can I please have one? But get this. This is how cool we are. This is how all right we are with each other's behavior. My mum emerged We're expecting like this stocking or a gigantic sack and brimming with presents, like on Home Alone. It was actually a pillowcase. She just stuffed our presents in a pillowcase and brought them out like that. So, I mean, you know what?
Fair enough.
It's fine, and I like it, and it's quirky. And there's so much plastic waste. There's so much paper waste. I used to even take down some of my music posters and use those as wrapping, just if it doesn't make a difference to me.
Or gifts, for that matter. Advent calendars, I'm terrible with advent calendars. You know, the minute I start opening up the first door, I've got to keep going, you know, so I end up doing at least a week, sometimes 2 weeks at a time. I've probably been known to go through the whole calendar in one evening, you know, so I'm not very good at biding my time, I'm afraid, as far as that's concerned. Of course, it depends on the brand of chocolate, but generally speaking, not great. So it sounds to me as though generally, despite everything that's going on, you're both planning, or you're all planning to have a relatively normal Christmas, which will be good news to any consumer-facing business right now, wondering what's going to happen in the last quarter. So it will be interesting to see whether or not that manifests itself more broadly in the public domain. I want to move on now to the topic we're going to spend a bit more time talking about, which is about customer service, and in particular, customer service online. And I guess the first thing I want to ask, Marie-Claire, is if you were going to contact a brand, whether they're or not, they don't need to be an online-only retailer. This could be a household name high street retailer that's got a website as well as obviously stores and everything. But if you were to go to the website in the first instance and think about how do I get in touch with this business, I mean, how would you contact them? How would you contact a brand today when you've got a customer service challenge that you need to highlight or you want some help with resolving?
I feel like they vary so much. If it was a John Lewis or Marks and Spencer, I would Google the telephone number and call them, because I feel genuinely that I'll get through to them quickly, because they are what they say on the tin. They have always, they don't let me down. You know, there's that feeling. And customer service will pick up quickly and link you straight through. I've had really good online customer service with Argos, where it's maybe been a chatbot, and they've quickly, chatbots are a bit of a thing for me, because if I feel like I can tell if it's a human or it's not. And sometimes they can be, I can't remember who it is. It might be Royal Mail. There's one where you can put your question in and it seems to keep saying, has this answered your question? Was that helpful? And it doesn't take you to a person. Whereas quite often I'm finding they're getting better. You are actually speaking to Betty at some point who is dealing with your query. So it's got to feel immediately like I'm being spoken to by a human, or I'll just try and call them.
Yeah. What about you, Dave?
Recently I spoke to Sandy at Santander. It put me in touch with the correct page that I was looking for savings accounts. One of the positives we could have looked at earlier, actually, I think the savings rate's gone up. So I was served the page immediately. If I was looking for an answer, if I had an inquiry of the brand, I would go to their website, and first place I'd go is contact us and hope that I'd find an 0207 or like an actual regional phone number. Essentially, most of the time, I've just got the most simple inquiries is like, are you open? So I did that with Halfords, and I ended up getting through to a switchboard, and they couldn't put me through to the branch to find out if my bike had been repaired. So it felt like I was going in circles for that. Chat ones, I really like them if they say the chat bots, as they get smarter, starting to become more useful, at least. Yeah. It feels like you're in the tree on when you call a customer service phone number. It feels like you press one. It feels like it's taken over that aspect. But when it does tell me that you've got a customer service person online and they really do chat to you, I've managed to resolve everything from like a website that went down completely to customizing a page on another website. I definitely was talking to someone. And I think as long as you've got the little notification they're typing, as with on WhatsApp or iMessage, it feels like the connection's live and you're going to get to the end eventually, hopefully get it resolved.
That was an interesting example you gave of Halfords, actually. I'm sure they'd be disappointed to hear that, but that's fairly indicative of lots of businesses that don't have all their channels and touch points connected and joined up. But you'd have thought in this day and age that a contact centre would be able to patch you through to the store. Even better, you'd have thought that that contact centre would be able to, wouldn't have to patch you through to the store, and they'd be able to access a system to tell you when your bike will be repaired, when you'll be able to pick it up. You know, that's what we call in the trade. We call that really having a single view of the customer, where no matter what channel or touch point you interact with the business, you know, you can pick up or leave your, you can pick up your journey basically wherever you want, whether that's in a store, in a contact center, on the website, and that business should have their system joined up to the point where they can recognize who you are and what you're there to try and do and provide you with the right type of support. So that's disappointing. I mean, was that actually you already had the bike booked in, or you were inquiring about how long it would take to have it serviced in the first place?
I can't actually remember. I can't remember the exact example, whether it was a stop check or I think I'd got my bike replaced and had it actually been delivered. Do I need to leave my house on foot to then get the bike and
People
home? But I mean, I, going back to my library days, the reason I say the word stop check, I don't know if it's an industry term, but when I worked in the library, people would reserve books from other branches. I had to go find it on the shelf, bring it back. We'd stick it on the lorry and send it to your branch. That system, even though it looked like Windows 95, and it probably was, it still worked incredibly well. So if someone called up and said, has my book arrived, I could go and check and come back with an answer. So I'm pretty shocked in certain instances where there's an inventory check and I just can't find out if you've got a particular thing, if I need to leave my house. I'm on the switchboard. I'm not at the store in this phone call.
I mean, that's why, and it's really interesting, isn't it? Again, it's 2022. And the reality is, you know, what you were just talking about there, something like 70 to 75% of all store purchases actually started by doing what you just described, checking online, right? Because why would you bother wasting your time to go to a physical environment unless you knew they had what you were looking for? Unless you were just going to, you know, on a bit of a discovery, then that's fine. But most people are needs-based, mission-based shoppers. You know, I'm going to go to the high street. I'm going to go here. I'm going to go there because I know what I want. But I want to make sure I know they've got it before I waste my time going there, you know. Going back to what you were saying, Marie-Claire, about chatbots or live chat, I actually implemented live chat way back in 2007, actually, at Ted Baker when I was head of online there. And it's quite interesting because at the time, I had a real challenge getting that one past the board, you know. They didn't want to sign it off. There was a kind of initial, well, why would anybody want to have that kind of, you know, live conversation with us on the website? And I said, well, sometimes people just want to know, is my bum going to look big in this? Am I going to look good in this? And even though back then there was no such thing as live video chat, which there is today, so chat's moved on quite a bit, where you can often see the people that you're engaging with and they can maybe see you, where they can give you much more practical, you know, hands-on advice about the products that you're looking at. Back then it was a faceless, you know, typing experience, but my instinct was that level of human intervention and interaction was still needed, and I still believe it's the case today. And you really nailed it there where you said, if it's not a human being, you know, if it's a chatbot, I'm off. I'm in the contact center. So here are all these businesses in the UK who have implemented these chatbots, thinking that would enable them to cut down their customer service costs. Because what too many businesses are focused on is the cost to serve you and I, rather than building our lifetime value and loyalty. Because if you were focused on the latter, you would never implement a robot to deal with human intervention, because at the moment they can't do it nearly as effectively as a human can. What they're good for is, using the pandemic as an example, if all of a sudden the government says, sorry, everybody, we're going into lockdown, and 100,000 people all contact British Airways and say, you know, I need a refund or I need a voucher for my flight because I'm not allowed to leave the country now. the chatbot can funnel you to the right team to solve that for you. Mm-hmm. If, however, you're stuck in Portugal and the government said, if you're not back by Friday, you're going to have to quarantine for 10 days or 2 weeks. The chatbot's useless at that. They can't, they don't have the ability to then go and make that change and change your flight and give you the support you're looking for. So I think that they have their place, but really in 99% of consumer and customer service type scenarios that I can think of, we still need that human intervention, human interaction. And I think we respond, you know, far better to it.
And
sorry, Michael, you're going to say something.
I've had some really good personal service from smaller business on live chat as well.
Yeah.
I had actually a delivery of a bike for my daughter's birthday, and it was Bobbin Bikes, who are relatively small, and they're, you know, family run business, I think, and or at least that's how it started. And I couldn't find out from the website, will this definitely arrive by this day? So I went on live chat and I said, look, I'm about to hit the button to buy this, but I have to have it by this time. And I was anticipating, well, we can't guarantee. And I got a really personalized, well, of course we're going to get it there for your daughter's birthday. She's only 6 months. And it was lovely. And they made sure, and they got everything to me. And I also said about putting it together. And they said, look, it arrives in a box. My advice, take it to a place, get it done. You know, don't try and do it yourself. It was so lovely. Yeah. And it just made me buy it.
I love that. Such a great example. I haven't actually heard of that business. Bobbin.
B-O-B-B-I-N.
Ah, right. Okay, sorry. I thought you were saying Boggin. A Boggin in Australia is something else. I was going to say if they're exporting to Australia, they might want to change their brand.
Yeah.
But Bobbin's nice. The brand as a brand, it conjures up a nice kind of warm image. And I think that's a great example of an independent, smaller independent business, presumably that, you know, probably a family business, no doubt, that just understands what it means to be, you know, customer centric. And it just takes common sense most of the time, right, to be able to sort an issue like that out. But you can imagine if that were a much bigger business, you might get a very different response, right, along the lines of what you thought you were going to get in the first place. And presumably, I mean, you know, when you have an experience like that, I mean, apart from sharing that with our listeners now and with us on the call, I mean, presumably you would tell other people about a great experience like that as well.
Yeah, definitely. As much as I talk about bad experiences, I will tell people when it's good.
Yeah.
Because it stands out. And it's a bit sad that it does stand out because, you know, you're paying a decent amount of money. And to be honest, I don't think it should be about whatever you're paying. I think customer service is customer service. And I don't know whether that's governed by the fact that I always waitressed or worked in stores, yeah, but it was kind of how we were taught to, you know, I worked totally in the House of Fraser, where they said to us, the carpets aren't for you, the carpets are for the customers.
The carpets aren't for you, the carpets are for the customers. What exactly?
They meant that we shouldn't be cutting through to get to the staff room by walking on the carpet. It's you go around the aisle, you know, your staff was a bit of a...
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Oh, well, interesting. Not maybe the best way to make you feel particularly engaged and, you know, ready to go the extra mile to serve customers and everything, right? You've been treated differently. Well, I used to work for a very large, well-known department store in the West End of London, and they used to have segregation within the staff restaurant. I mean, everybody had a colour of card, and I was senior management, so I was allowed to sit in a certain part of the restaurant, but other people weren't allowed to sit in a certain part of the restaurant. Some funny old nuances that used to go around in our businesses and historically, hopefully not anymore. That is not a policy these days, I know for sure. But it's really interesting, isn't it, that a business would think, you know, to somehow staff are less important. In my mind, staff are the most important asset in any business because the people in the front line, you know, you're the person that makes the difference between the success of that business or not. because you're serving and you're selling to customers, right? And if you're feeling motivated, you'll deliver a great experience. And if you're feeling marginalized for whatever reason, you most likely won't, I would imagine. In terms of other sort of forms of customer service, Dave, you talked earlier about, you know, phoning up and having a conversation with somebody, I think, about a website. But have you had any other good or bad experiences you can share generally, whether that's phoning in or emailing or just where it's been a bit frustrating or where you've or the opposite, where you've thought, crikey, that was really good. That really stood out.
Have I had good customer service on the telephone before? Yes, I have. And that's because, and I need to check if this website still exists. If it does, it's a godsend and everyone needs to use it. So I want my local telephone number so I know I'm getting through to a local branch of wherever it is. I've got a website that I use called Say No to 0870, which gives you the regional phone number. And more often than not, because it's edited by people, and people amend it, so it's like a Wikipedia for this. You can get through to a number that's not going to come out for your minutes on your phone contract or pay as you go or landline, and usually they can get you through to the department, whether you need savings or whether you need mortgages or investments or whatever. It'll give the exact one, and I think there's another one as well that tells you the order to press the buttons, press one for this, press two for this. I need to look up what that one is as well. But if I'm going to do this on the telephone and it's not direct to a store, it seems kind of odd that I'm going the extra mile to not go the extra mile. So I'm not waiting as long on the phone. I can't
tell you what, though, I've never met anyone that's got so many hacks and top tips for saving money. Not just saving money, but going to, I'm not being facetious, you know, I mean that, you know, but not just saving money, but going, you know, being able to get to the right people to help you solve a problem, you know. So there's a top tip. I hadn't heard of that website before. Just remind me what it's called.
It's Say No to 0870.
Say No to 0870. Just on that theme, out of curiosity, have either of you ever emailed the CEO of a business because of a customer service issue that hasn't gone your way, where they've not been able to resolve it? Yes, Marie Claire?
I can't remember, because it is so long ago, what I had a problem with Virgin, but I had such a facetious person in customer services telling me they couldn't help me, they'd done everything they could. And I said, kind of just a riposte, but I knew I'd follow through on it. I said, what is the name of Richard Branson's PA? And he facetiously said the name back to me, and I wrote to her and I got some vouchers. I can't tell you what the problem was, but I really felt seen and heard.
Yeah. What about you, David? Have you ever gone to the top?
No, I've never been that enraged, but that feels like the equivalent of, can I speak to the manager? Being proactive and actually going all the way. Although the other day I was checking out of a hotel and I did hear that phrase, can I have your name? Can I have your manager's name? I think at the end of the day, after you've got over your rage, because you need that customer service, you need to, both people that are going to have that kind of argument need to breathe and remember that they're human beings. And actually, fair enough, you're not trained. I shouldn't have assumed you were trained to fix this. But yeah, all I'm trying to do is check out my hotel, drop the key.
I think that's very generous of you, but I would take issue with that last comment. I think we should expect people that are there, you know, at the end of a phone or the end of an email or whatever it is, to be able to help us, even if they're not the person that's empowered. A lot of this comes down to empowerment or lack of empowerment, whether or not people that are actually on the front line of engagement, whether they're really given the authority to deal with a problem on behalf of, you know, the business. Because I think for, again, businesses that are focused on the cost to serve would probably regale in horror at the idea of allowing somebody on the front line, for example, to just offer compensation. But you take a business like Timpson, you know, where you get your keys cut or your shoes rehealed or whatever, people that work on the front line of their business, the staff in the stores, whether they've been there one day, 1 minute, 1 week, 1 year, or 10 years, they're all empowered, no matter what level they're in, they're at in the business, they're all empowered to make a decision. And they can, not only can they can give compensation up to £500 if there's been a problem, without having to go up the chain of command and asking for permission. But they can also change prices and change promotions and offer discounts if the customer says, well, you know, I've seen this somewhere else, you know, 10 pounds cheaper or whatever. So that, and that level of true trust and empowerment, to my mind, obviously makes the people that work in those branches feel incredibly valuable and important, which they are, because Timson recognised that actually they're the difference between success and failure. So I think, you know, whilst you're a very fair-minded man, I think we're quite right and entitled to have expectations that people can solve stuff for us. I had an issue, I won't bore you or anybody else with all the details, but I had an issue about a year ago, maybe 18 months ago now, with BA. And I mean, I've flown, you know, all over the world. I've got a lot of air miles with BA. I'm regularly going to Australia and business and everything. And I had they treated me and my family really quite badly on a couple of occasions. And I tried to go to the top about this to the then CEO, a guy called Alex Cruz. And I was called by the contact center. And I got somebody who was in typical customer service sort of speak to the opposite of what you were saying. They'd been overtrained and they were almost, you could almost hear them following a script. And all they were doing, I could tell that all they were doing was empathizing with me. I'm really sorry. You know, we're really sorry for the trouble this has caused you, Mr. Newman, and your family. And I can't express, you know, how deeply we're sorry about this. And said, great, but what are you actually going to do about it? Nothing. Nothing. Not empowered to do anything about it. And this actually happened twice. I said, well, you know, what's the point? What's the point in you wasting your time calling me if you're not actually empowered to resolve the issue or give me any, you know, any compensation or whatever it happens to be? So I think that in this day and age, you know, customer expectations generally are quite high. And I think they're right to be high. You know, we're even more so today when every penny is a prisoner, right? And times are tough. You know, I think it's really important that businesses prove that they want to keep us both now and in the future.
Firstly, I would have, in response to that, I'd say I'd ask who Richard Branson's PA is to the people at PA. Yes, you're right. I do intend to be fair-minded, but it was a travelodge. And what did you expect? And I should have said, do you want to be a guest on this podcast that I'm doing next week? Because what the person behind the desk said is you need to go to the website. So I know they're starting off on a journey just to complain.
Oh dear. Yeah, that's the old computer says no, right? It's not my fault, mate. You need to go somewhere else. I'm just gonna finish with one anecdote that I've got. When I was buying, I buy these Boss trousers that I wear almost, I've not got them on today actually, but I wear them when I'm presenting and I'm doing a lot of the business work that I do. They're just really, they always keep their shape. They've got little zips in the pockets, very handy when you're traveling, keep your cash in there, all the rest of it, your cards. And I tried to buy a few pairs of these one day from the Boss website and I used Apple Pay, and Apple Pay said it's gone through, and the Boss website immediately said, sorry, problem with your order, hasn't gone through. So of course I panicked. I thought they've just taken 300 odd quid off me for three ridiculously expensive pairs of trousers. Right, I'm going to contact the brand. It was a Friday night, or early Friday night, kind of Friday evening, like 6 o'clock. Went on the website. How can I contact them? WhatsApp, brilliant. Love it when a brand has WhatsApp for service. Email, forms, telephone, tried the lot. And of course, their customer service hours are not there to suit me. They might have changed, but they weren't 6-7 months ago. They were there to suit the business. So they had all gone home for the weekend. Took them 5 days to get back to me. And when they eventually got back to me, they said, it's what you experienced there. They pushed the problem onto me. They said, we've checked on our end. No payment's gone through. Therefore, it's not our issue. We suggest you contact Apple Pay, right? Customer service. So there was no real ownership of the issue. They could have helped, I think, a bit more. As I say, it took them 5 days to come back to me. But the biggest thing of the lot was not a single person tried to sell me anything. I told them clearly I'd wanted to buy 3 pairs of trousers. And all they did is make me go away. Pesky customer, you know? So if I were running that business, I'd be pretty hacked off at the thought that that money had walked out the door and gone somewhere else, potentially. Anyway, listen, guys, I have really enjoyed talking to you as always. And I just to add, by the way, if you do have a customer service problem in the future, I highly recommend you go to www.customerserviceaction.com. That's a website I've got. And it's there to help people that have had bad customer service. We connect them with the brand and we encourage the business to do something about it. So if you do have an issue in the future, genuinely, you should go there and log it with us. We capture everything about it and then we try to do something about resolving it. I'm very grateful, Manny Clare, again, for your great insight and all the great experiences that you share. Same with you, Dave, and great to talk to you both. Shame we didn't have the wonderful Layla with us today, but I'm sure we will the next time. That's it for Consumer Focus. Thank you for listening and look forward to seeing you the next time. Thank you very much.